I'm Matt.
Hey, I'm Steve.
Hey, I'm John.
This is the Sober Friends Podcast. We're here for the sober curious, the new guy, and the old timer. We're here to talk about the stuff anyone looking to live alcohol-free has to face day to day, and how we overcame those struggles. We speak for no 12-step group, but we do try to remain anonymous. You're not alone. This is the Sober Friends Podcast. Here's what's really difficult when you first come into a recovery group. However you find recovery, and for me and Steve, it was a 12-step group, is you finally get over that hump and decide, I've got a problem, I got to quit drinking, and then you walk in and see people, and you're like, you're not like me. So how do you find recovery? And immediately it is comparison, not identifying. What's the risk there, Steve?
It's tough. I think a lot of us come in and it's the only thing we can do, right? We talk about,
right,
you know, how we, you know, I've talked about it, many people in this program, if you have an addiction problem in your family, either with siblings or parents, it's easy to compare yourself, which is what I did. Right. I had a brother who had struggled long before I started to struggle, and he struggled with a more variety of substances, lived in the woods. Right. He was your typical really bad, you know, so I compared myself to him, and it was easy for me, even when I came into the program, to say, oh, I'm not like that. That's not me. Right. It took me a long time to figure out that he and I shared the same addiction. And I mean that. It took me a long time. So it's really hard. You got to come in, and this is where, again, we talk about it all the time. This is where you get some support in these groups, and people can help you sort of work through that a little bit. But no, we all compare. And listen, we still compare today somewhat, but we have a little bit more. You know, I think we all have a little bit more if you're in the program for a while, and if you have some support groups, you know, you don't do it as much.
It's a lot easier. Actually, what I was trying to say is I just realized in the past maybe month or two that it actually was probably harder for me than maybe others. That if you're able to hold your life together, it doesn't mean you have less of an illness. It just means you're harder headed. And it's actually worse in many ways if you can hold it together because you suffer for longer. That you can tell yourself, because I just choose to continue running into the wall, I must be fine, as opposed to people who quit a lot earlier or don't hold it together. Then it becomes easier to see and maybe easier to find your way into some room.
Yeah, in our book, right, in our literature, they talk about how, you know, if you're that, it's many times easier to help the low bottom alcoholic because of that, right? Like they could just look and go, shit, here I am, 30-something years old. I have a wife and kids, and I'm living out in the street, literally, like sleeping under bridges and stuff, right? They may be able to see that, where you and I, who, you know, lived in houses, you know, we owned homes with our spouses, we went to work, and we did all these things, it was a little bit harder to see. And even when I came into the program, it was really, really difficult for me. I mean, this is a great topic for me, because it was really difficult. I mean, I shared it. I came in 95. And again, one of the things I said, I can remember thinking when I came into the program and went to meetings, I can't go to meetings that my brother would go to. I needed a higher class meeting, right? I laugh, right? I mean it. Like, that's what I thought in my head. Like, oh, I'm not going to go to meetings with him. He goes to those low bottom drunk meetings. I need a higher class meeting. It's funny to hear me say that today. It's funny to me, but it kept me out for a long time. It kept me struggling for a long time. I didn't drink for a while. You know, if you listen to this podcast, you know my story was I didn't drink for a while, but I still struggled with life and struggled with addiction behaviors. And that's because I was comparing.
Right.
Right. And then what happened was I stopped drinking, and I'd like, oh, listen, I stopped drinking. My life, you know, is heading in the right direction. Little did I know that I was still suffering.
First couple of meetings I went to, the very first meeting that I went to was a beginner's meeting, because me being very logical, I went through, I didn't even get a meeting book. I just went online. I found meetings online immediately, and I went through the online book that tells you the type of meetings. So there are open meetings, closed meetings, big book meetings, discussion meetings, speaker meetings, and there's different combinations of them, tradition meetings. There's all these different types of subsets of Alcoholics Anonymous meetings, specialty meetings, men's meetings, women's meetings. There's gay AA. There's there's all different types of meetings out there, and one of them is a beginner's meeting. And so I figure I would go to a beginner's meeting because I'm a beginner. That's where you start your orientation into AA. And I figured, you know, there'd be like some sign-up sheet or something, right. And you'd have a, you know, a packet, you'd fill out right. Your insurance or
right.
Whatever.
Yeah.
And that's not what it was at all. And I was sure that the person who was chairing the meeting, maybe they were from the church or they were somebody that, I don't know, professionally who worked for AA. And it was not conceivable to me that people who are part of the group would chair the meeting. You know, that's yeah. A professional position.
Right.
And this was a shit show, at least to me, initially, that I went to this meeting. It was in a tougher part of East Hartford. It was, the church was not pretty to look at. And I found out later the reason they have a beginner's meeting there is because there's rows of sober houses. If you don't know what a sober house is, these are houses that people are coming from rehab and they're sort of reentering, that there are people who live with sober people for a short period of time, or maybe it's a medium term period of time, but they're newly sober. And so they went to this beginner's meeting, and it was all new people. It was people who were low bottom, constantly relapsing. There was one guy the second time I went who came in and said, you know, my name is so-and-so and I'm drunk, actually drunk in the meeting. And I'm like, this is not for me. This is not like me. I am better than these people. And it embarrasses me to say that now, because I was no better. And there's a lot of value from those.
Yeah, it's really, really difficult for most of us, certainly not for everyone, but for most of us, or for many of us, put it that way, for many of us who come in, it's difficult to come in and not think that somehow we're different, right? Mm-hmm. We're unique. We're different. That maybe this thing doesn't fit us. And it really, it's easy to walk into these things. We have a sober club, right, in my town, and you know, it's been around since, I think it was 1944. It opened up, and I just remember being brought there early in my sobriety. And again, just like the church thing for you was, this was an older. It was a house that was gifted to help recovery. I remember it being dark and dingy and probably dirty and a bunch of probably really low bottom. Like, and today I go to recovery, you know, clubs in different towns. I have some family who lives in different towns. And the thing about them is, like, there's always meeting at recovery clubs. Like, it's easy to find them. So there's one in New Jersey that I visited and one in Chicago that I visited. And if I go out there, a lot of times I'll go to these meetings because it's easy to go to a meeting. And they're all the same, right? They attract a lot of people who come in. It's a warm place. We've talked about it here. There's a cup of coffee, maybe a donut or something. So, you know, it's a great. But I just remember being like, I did not like that place. That place was not for me, right? Today I realize, I look at it and now I can go into that same place. It's not far from where I live today. And I'm like, I can go in there today and look at the people. And first of all, I know a lot of people. I go into that club anytime and I'm going to know at least a half a dozen people probably. So I don't have to do that comparison. I don't have to do that because I know these people are suffering the same addiction as I am. It just kept me, sick, and it kept me from really working a program for a long time before I could really understand that these people were just like me when it came to alcohol, we were all the same. The other stuff, maybe not. But when it came to alcohol, once we started, we had a problem with it. And with that, once I learned that, then I could talk to anybody in these rooms.
I listened to a podcaster who is very well known, has a very big podcast, and is worth a lot of money, has talked about how he sold his private jet and now he wants to buy another private jet. And this guy also talks about all the drinking he does, how he was cutting back and it was okay because now he's into edibles. And I'm concerned with how I hear him talk about his drinking. And there's no difference. And a lot of times, because you have that many resources, it's tough to admit you have a problem because you can live with the consequences. You can blow through money or have disasters that are going to destroy normal people that don't, because you have such a cushion.
Right.
That can really be a detriment when you have a cushion. So here are the risks. We'll do this kind of like a story because I'm getting somewhere with this. it is very easy to compare. And the risk with comparing is you can just keep comparing and talk yourself out of having a problem. Because you want to compare to, well, am I like this person? Well, they don't own a house, so I don't have a problem. Or this guy, you know, he's dressed up nicely, but he was a low bottom drunk at one time. He was homeless. I was never homeless, so I must not have a problem. If you take to its logical end comparing with whoever you meet, you will not hear your story, because you could compare to the point that if it's not exactly like you, then you have nobody to compare to. What identifying means, where are the bits and pieces that you can identify with the story? So the first person I felt a comparison to was this firefighter who's got 40-something years of sobriety now. And he talked about, I didn't drink every night. I could stop at two beers at times, but when I stopped at two beers, I was miserable. And even though this guy was in his 60s at the time and was a former firefighter, I could identify with something. It was that one piece of, I could have to and stop, but I was miserable. And that was a ding, ding, ding. I've got a problem. You can always find, and I don't know if there's low bottom meetings. There are meetings that are in tough places, but there are always going to be people there of different walks of life. Even if you hear somebody that you see who might be homeless or might not be on the social economic status as you, if you just listen to their symptoms, you will hear the same symptoms you have. It might be in a different setting, but you'll hear, I got into trouble drinking. Doesn't matter what the trouble was. I got into trouble drinking. Here's the jam I got into. Here's how I realized I had to stop. That's it. You can color that any different way of socioeconomic areas. But if you break it down to that and you just listen for that, you're going to get something.
Yeah, when I started to be able to do that and I started to be able to hear my story was when, or my, not even my story, my struggles, I think is more of it. When I started to hear that people struggled like I did, right? Because again, I came in here thinking that I was unique. I did. And that's not, and that's not, not the, no pun intended. That's not unique to me. I came in here thinking that. So when I started to hear some of these people who, like, I knew they were different from me. I knew we didn't have a lot in common. But when I started to hear and identify with some of their struggles or some of the behaviors, and I was like, oh, crap, I do that too. Or that's a problem for me too. And then I started to realize, well, maybe, you know, this person has, you know, especially early on, this person has 12 years of sobriety or 15 years of sobriety. Maybe this person can offer me some help, right? That's the difference, is I was able to start making that identification and then going for help. I don't remember when that exactly happened. I really don't. Like, you have these memories of when it happened for you. I don't have that memory. But I certainly do remember when we talk about my buddy Edson all the time now. I remember, like, I didn't know Edson from a hole in the wall. But all of a sudden, when I started to get to this point where I could identify, I realized that Edson's brain and my brain worked almost exactly the same. We were totally different people. Right? Totally different people. But his brain and my brain, when it comes to alcohol and it comes to character defects, worked exactly the same. And we became very close in this program because Edson has a lot of sobriety and I knew he could help me and he was willing to help me. So it really, you know, the other thing is when you were talking about comparing and identifying, and this is why I said it still can happen today. You know, we do service, we talk about service, and I can remember a lot of times, well, yeah, you know, that kid, that guy's not married. You know, that guy doesn't have a family. You know, that guy, he can do all the service he wants. Like, he can put in more time than I can put in because he doesn't know what it's like to have a job and have two kids and like that kind of stuff, right? But yet today I do service and I see people who are just as busy as I ever was. Yeah. And they're just making time to do their service, right? And their service takes them out just like it would take me out, you know? So, you know, that's the other thing that can happen. That's why I said it could still happen today. And, you know, I look around the rooms and I still can look at somebody and go, you know, no family, no kids. They have it a lot easier than I have it, you know. So even today I have no kids because of, you know, my kids are grown. So, you know, so I don't have any of that kind of stuff. It's like I'm at a different point in my life. So it's like I'm having no kids. I am married, so I have to keep that in mind. But it's really, you know, the identification, and like you said, it could keep you stuck. It can keep you stuck if you compare. And you need to get out of that. I mean, if you're doing that. And again, that's where, you know, we talk about it. It's like beating a dead horse or, you know, just like that's where working with another alcoholic will help you. Working with someone who knows this program, who's gone through these steps, or some of these other communities that I don't know much about. Like, that's where somebody else can point out some of these things to you. Like, hey, here's what you're doing here, you know. Here's what you're doing here. You're comparing. You're really not seeing your issues. You're only trying to see their issues. You know?
Right. I look at this as in recovery. It's like you're the company vice president, and the guy who is your mentor is the janitor, and the janitor is the one who has all the wisdom. That's the way it is here. What you are socially doesn't matter, because you could come in and feel somebody is low bottom and you'll find more wisdom from that person. Edson is a Six Sigma black belt in recovery, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, absolutely.
Different lifestyle, but that's the guy a lot of times that is going to help you stay sober. They know a lot more and they can share that. In terms of service, if you're somebody who is in corporate, those are probably the people who are more likely to be involved and take the time for service, because it's just part of what they do. You know, I work in a corporate world. I do volunteer work outside of work. It's just kind of expected that you do some of those things. So I look at recovery and service as sort of an extension of that. I would expect to see people in a corporate career who would be in some of those service positions. And then there's also the people who don't have kids and stuff. But
right.
It also cuts across. There's all demographics in this stuff. So when you're identifying, here's sort of the secret here. You have to stop being unique. This was the thing that was very hard for me. It was the first lesson that when you come into recovery, you have to stop being unique from anybody else. You have to learn to be average. And that is very difficult in the United States, because our culture is to be the best of the best and to stand out and be unique and be a shining beacon. And good recovery doesn't look like that. Good recovery looks like I blend in. I'm not noticeable. And when you identify, it keeps you humble, because you can see yourself in everybody, no matter who they are. You are no better or worse than anybody else.
You know, AA has a lot of these the silly sayings. Maybe not so silly, but some people think they are. And I think a lot of us, when we come in, I think we think they are. But one of the things, and this isn't one of those big ones, but a lot of people say, I'm just another drunk on the bus, right? And that's what we talk about, right? And so you look at that thing, like the bus full of people, if they're all drunks, I'm not driving the bus. I'm just another drunk. That's all I am, right? So, you know, and like I said, I'm just one of a group. I'm not outside of the group, within the group. And to me that gives me comfort. You know, one of the things that happened when I discovered all this is that I was able to relax, to realize that, you know, one of the things that, you know, my character defects and my problem growing up was that I felt like I had to take care of, we've talked about this, I felt like I had to do everything. I had to take care of everything. I had to, you know, run my own life from an early age. And when I realized that there were people that could help me, when I really realized that, it really took a burden off of me. Like, oh, wait a minute, I don't need to do this on my own. There are people who actually know the answers that I need. Like, and so I have to be willing to listen to them. And today, it's unusual for me. And listen, I'm a human being, so I still judge at times. But it's unusual for me to judge somebody based upon something other than their sobriety and their messages. Like, I really don't care about what they do, anybody for that matter. Because a lot of times I can walk into a meeting and not know anybody. Not know everybody. So somebody could speak and share, and I'll know nothing about that person. So I'm only listening to their message. And then, you know, and when I do that, either that message resonates with me or it doesn't. And it doesn't, not bad if it doesn't, but there's so many people that I can resonate with today because I identify with their struggles. I identify with the problem. And then I try to listen for the solution, right? If this is the whole thing, we get back to it. If I identify a problem and this other person has a problem and they seem to overcome it, they have a solution for it.
Yep.
And hopefully that solution would work for me too, right? It would work for me too. And so that's the key when you put it like, oh, wow, listen, that person is struggling, you know, with that. And the same thing that goes on. I have a sponsee that one day we were in a meeting. It was our Monday night meeting in the old church, and we were cleaning up afterwards. And if I remember correctly, he was either helping clean up or he had a coffee commitment. He wasn't my sponsee at the time. And he was talking about how he had gone through a divorce, and he was having a really tough time with his ex-wife and the kid. He had two children. And he was about the same age as I was when I first came in. And I remember looking at him like, I looked at him like, I could help you with that problem. All right? Like, I went through that. And I said, if you ever want to talk, and this was a little bit different than the A, but he ended up becoming a sponsee of mine because he had a problem that I had to deal with. And I was able to tell him, hey, listen, if you want to get together, then we could do a little work on that. And that's the way I survive these days, too.
I thought of Mike C. on Monday. I think it was Mike C. recently, but I also remember Frank C., who's not with us anymore. So this guy, Frank C., had, I don't know, 31 years of sobriety. He, another one of these guys that sponsored, you know, half of the people on our side of the Connecticut River. Well-known guy, went to the same meetings, every single meeting, and talked about, in a meeting one time, about how he kind of felt like a failure because one of his sponsees went out. And I almost sort of think there of like, if Frank couldn't keep this guy sober, how the hell am I going to keep this guy sober?
Right.
But it's not really about that. I think it really was that meeting where Frank was doing that is Frank wasn't complaining about that. Frank was asking for help. Mm-hmm. He was looking for moral support for him because he was broken up over this guy going out. And Frank was a retired old guy. I'm far from retirement. But in that position, I look at somebody like that, if I can identify with, there's a feeling of loss there for him. Whatever it is, he has a feeling of loss and a feeling of failure. I can identify with that. And then, you know, this old black guy, to me, is further up the echelon than me because he's got all this sobriety and all these sponsees and there's reverence towards him. There's something I would want. And if I just looked at the surface, maybe I don't think that way.
Not only that, and that's the beauty of somebody like Frank, who I didn't know well. I certainly knew him as we were talking. We were a little bit late doing this tonight because I was planning on going to one of those meetings that Frank used to always go to. And I just knew of him, and I knew him because for going to certain meetings. You know, it's one of the things when you get somebody like that, and it's one of the things I appreciate, is that when somebody who has really good sobriety, and Frank did have really good sobriety, and he had a really good program and all of those things, that when he can share that he's struggling with somebody, with something, when he can share that, and it was one of the things, it really was one of the revelations for me, when I heard somebody who I thought had a really good program share some of the same struggles I had. Part of it was like, oh crap, I'm going to have to deal with this for the rest of my life. Right? Really? Like, oh, wait a minute. This person runs a really... And then the other part was, oh, I thought I was doing something wrong. Why wasn't I getting this? And then it was like,
right.
When I realized and I talked to people, not just the person, but when I talked to people, I was like, oh, no, this is something I'll have to do for the rest of my life. Like, I will have to work on a lot of these things. Not all of them, but a lot of these things. Because they'll keep coming back. Because, you know, we talk about it in our program that my drinking... And this is what my failure was the first time I came into AA. My drinking was but a symptom of my real problems, right? It was me trying to cover up some of those issues that I've had in life. You know, when I first came into the program, I didn't think of it that way. I thought my drinking was the problem. But today I realized differently that my problem is in my thinking. It's in a lot of things. And the drinking is just what happens when some of that other stuff goes bad.
Yeah, you could go into the inner city and go to a meeting with all people who are low bottom. And if you just close your eyes and hear things, you will hear the same mindset that you have. What I often do as well is I listen to some of those people. And it reminds me that what they went through is something that could be in my future if I don't do the right thing.
Yeah,
I think about that a lot. This isn't my story, but there's no reason it couldn't be my story someday. And even though I'm going to feel like I'm in a good place, keep your ears open. Hear that stuff that's really bad so that you have something that you can think of that I need to keep doing this because I don't want to end up the places they have. They were lucky enough to survive. Or the people who relapse, and then get it. I listen to that because I'm afraid I don't have a relapse in me to come back. The people who come back, like, thank God, I'm going to try and do everything I can because I don't think I'm not confident I could come back after a relapse. There'd be too much shame. Maybe I could, but I don't want to test it. So I listen to those relapse stories.
You know, Matt, one of the things you're saying, and I always said, when I came into the program, I certainly had a lot of drugs in my past. Most of them weren't, it wasn't really bad drug use. Smoking dope, smoking pot was bigger than any of the other stuff. But most of the problems with my drug use, I mean, this was financial. Like, I just didn't have the money to do a lot of drugs. And one of the things I realized is when I came into this program is that I had come in and I had given up all my drugs and I wasn't out there doing that kind of stuff during the crack cocaine epidemic, you know? And I think about, like, I am so grateful because that was like the perfect drug. It was cheap, right? You smoke it. I loved smoking pot. You know, I was able to miss that. So I would come in, I would see people my age or maybe just a little bit younger talking about how they were like sucking on the crack pipe, you know? And I was like, that could have been me. That could have been me. You know what I mean? Like, I could have ended up there. And lucky for me, I didn't. So it's the same thing. When I hear some stories like that, I just think, listen, you know.
The former mayor of Toronto
yeah.
was a crack smoker.
Right. And the biggest thing, I remember I was in church and there was this guy who was a big executive in one of the insurance companies. Beautiful family would show up every Sunday. Turned out he lost everything because he was a crack smoker. He lost it all. Lost his family, lost his job. And it's like, I remember looking at that, like, how could that happen? And but for the grace of God, I mean that. It's like, it could have been me. It could have been me. I got out of a lot of that stuff before it became popular, and I'm really happy I did because it could have been scary, and it could have been deadly. It could have been deadly.
If you've been sober for 10 or more years, you missed out on the opioid epidemic, and I feel very fortunate about that. I had some pain pills, and the only reason I stopped taking them is if I don't stop this now, I will become addicted.
Right.
So I'm not going to start there. Those were the things I loved more than anything else. And because I had that feeling, it's like, I have to not take this.
Yeah.
This is not good. And I can get by with alcohol. Lots of benefits there. We would love to hear what you have to say about that. You can always reach out to me, Matt, at SoberFriendsPod.com or on Instagram. Give us a follow at SoberFriendsPod.com. If you feel generous, there are expenses that we have. And I'm thinking about this because we got to re-up the website. Everything that you put in, I actually put into this interest-bearing account. I don't spend it until we have to re-up something. If you want to help us out, it goes a long way getting this into the new guy or girl's ears. You can go to buymeacoffee.com/soberfriendspod. We'll give you a shout out. Steve, thanks for coming in tonight and identifying with us.
Hey, Matt, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
All right. We'll see everybody next week. Bye-bye, everybody. You made it this far into the podcast. That tells me you're a pretty big fan. If you like what we do and you find value in the podcast, consider a donation at buymeacoffee.com/soberfriendspod. Your donation keeps us on the air to help out the new guy and helps us defray some of our costs. If you find value in our podcast, please consider a donation at buymeacoffee.com/soberfriendspod.